Hey, Verano.
You're looking pensive. What's on your mind?
No need to be insulting.
I meant that it looked like you were thinking. I guess I shouldn't have worried about that.
Oh, I was thinking of ways to get people interested in supporting the podcast.
You mean like on Patreon and stuff? Where people could provide financial backing for their favorite stuff?
Yeah, exactly. But before we can set up something like that, we need to figure out some kind of incentive to interest people.
Well, what do you mean?
I mean, we could ask people to donate an amount they think the podcast is worth through a site like that, but those sites usually don't think it's worth their cut to have people donating a penny a month.
So do you have any solutions?
Not really. I have ideas, but we don't have enough listeners yet to make it happen.
Well, like what? Which idea do you think is best?
I mean, eventually it'd be pretty cool to have a merch lottery every month where people who donate to the podcast become eligible to win things like rare or signed comics, other types of collector's items, maybe even like if we have some podcast merch, throw that in and just like have people able to win like prizes every month that we just kind of send out to them and shit, just for, donating to the pod, for, a little bit. And other stuff like that.
Well, okay, so how do we get the point where we can do that?
Well, the first thing we have to do is increase our listener base and get more people interested in listening to our nonsense.
I mean, that's a pretty tall order, dude. What can we do to increase our listener base?
Really all we can do is keep putting word out about the pod and the places that we can and humbly ask our listeners to do the same.
So we have more than one
Well, we do.
listener, I mean, we have more than one listener.
Well, we do according to Anchor.
Oh, and we appreciate everyone. Thank you so very much.
Damn right. Enough of this sappy shit. Let's start the show.
Damn,
Welcome.
do we have to?
Verano and Senseless present DPIY. I am the Senseless Apprentice. I think I might have been the single reader editor Nicole Wiley kept telling people about on the recap pages of the series we are reading, Cable and Deadpool. With me is the person unlucky to have, enough to have let me convince them to read through these obscure texts with me. Mr. Verano.
Hello, hello. Yes, I somehow got duped into this and I still keep going with it. I, really don't know why, but then again, this has been hysterical fun stuff. And for the three listeners I believe we now have, thank you. Please, please spread the word to everyone, even grandma, grandpa. Hell, even your dogs might actually pass it on to everybody else.
Anyone you can.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything new in Oh wait, what was
As we were talking earlier, finally just actually was watching episode two of Loki. I know I've had a few friends be like, "Oh, you watch everything?" I'm like, "No." They're like, "Why not?" I'm like, "I want to binge on it because knowing my ass, like, I'll be annoyed watching episode week by week."
I surprise My thing was, well, my thing. I talked about it before. My thing was having to temper my incessant need to fan theorize. So, I've actually done pretty good, I think, with Loki. I've posted a few things where I've just joked about fan theories, but for the most part, it's just been fun to watch and try to figure out what the fuck is going on.
Yeah, I'm still gonna get there, but I'm enjoying just the actual banter that like Owen Wilson's character has with Loki. Just because it's kind of funny shit. But like I said, I'm only on episode two. I'll probably get to like the end of what they have so far by tonight, just because I'll probably midge the crap out of it. Otherwise than that, I am excited to eventually see Black Widow. I'm not willing to pay. I'll just wait till Disney Plus gives up and just puts it out for free.
That'll be about a year, but I'm gonna
I don't give a crap.
I just gotta find some people to chip in. I don't want to pay $30 for just myself to watch it. That's fucking bullshit. That's the worst movie ticket ever. But if other people are gonna chip in, I'll host or I don't have a big enough place to host, but I'll throw in to watch it somewhere.
Maybe we could do it at a Beefy's.
Maybe.
Yeah, I'll pitch in for that too.
But yeah, I'm not I'm I'm not buying the shit. Like, I was on Instagram seeing all this crap where people were getting advanced screenings and being like, oh, it was so good. And it was like, oh, you're on the take and you thought it was great? Awesome.
Yeah, we'll
You're
see.
getting,
Otherwise,
like,
any.
they're paying you. Your word is worth shit.
Yeah. Otherwise, the only other thing that's been cool to see is, actually, I believe I follow The Rock. His actual pictures of him trying to get in shape for Black Adam.
They have a release date and all that
I
kind of stuff.
know, but the dude is ridiculously still jacked at his age.
Oh,
So
well.
he looked great. He looks like the actual goddamn character. So pretty cool.
He can afford all the amenities to make that happen.
Well,
Like,
yes, and he has his own goddamn home gym, which is literally just an actual gym he just added in the back of his house.
and being in that kind of shape is literally kind of part of his job, so he has to maintain it. So it's like, wouldn't it be awesome for guys like us if our job was to work out, was at least part of our job was to work out to maintain that kind of thing?
If by any chance, in any kind of way, The Rock or someone that knows The Rock, if you would love to sponsor us and pay us to work out with you, please. Also, can I be in the movie? That'd be great. I don't care if I'm an extra. I don't really give a shit. I'll be happy. All right. As we proceed into the episode.
So today we are on chapter/issue 21 of our series. This one's titled Bosom Buddies Part 2, Friendly Fire. It's written by Fabian Nicieza, penciled by Patrick Zercher, inked by Udon's Meth, colored by Gotham, and lettered by Visual Calligraphy's Corey Petit, or Pettit. I don't know how he pronounces it, whatever. Where was I? Oh, yeah, the cover art is penciled by Patrick Zercher. It's inked by Udon's Meth by Rob Schwager.
Awesome. The Heroes for Hire, Luke Cage and Iron Fist. Oh, God, that show was terrible. As I proceed, are on the recap page this time, each holding a picture of the namesake of the series. Luke has a picture of Cable, while Danny Rand, Iron Fist, is holding a picture of good old Deadpool.
So, and it's interesting, like, the thing about the recap pages is the only character who knows about or references the recap pages in the narrative section of the story is Deadpool. So, like, for everyone else, like, Danny Rand and Iron, or Luke Cage and Iron Fist are here, and their commentary is more fourth wally. It's more, very aware of their comic book situation. It's but the pictures they're holding is also an interesting choice, because each is in a way paired with their equivalent in the other partnership. Because Deadpool and Iron Fist are more agile and oriented towards martial arts and their fighting styles, while Cable and Luke Cage are kind of considered the powerhouse characters of their pairs.
Is Cable still the powerhouse, even with no actual powers anymore?
Well, as we see in this issue, even without telepathy and telekinesis, Cable himself is a force to be reckoned with.
Oh, well, okay then. At the time of the publication, October of 2005, oof, makes me feel old. Luke Cage was a member of the New Avengers, but Iron Fist didn't really have any titles of his own, which is why their cameo in this issue is framed as Cage helping out his buddy Danny Rand. He makes it clear that he does not want to be there. Luke also clearly hates the concept of the recap page, which only Deadpool can remember in the narrative page of the comic, which is why Danny does most of the talking here.
So Iron Fist explains that a number of people were hired to steal something called the Dominus Objective, which is a secondary hard drive that acts like a virus, that acts like a server. And if you find that explanation confusing, I can just tell you that you're not alone.
Oh, completely not alone. The two, three other listeners and us, we're still confused on that one sentence. Please, please, people, keep passing the word. By the time literally everyone who was hired to steal the objective got to it, it had already been stolen. Deadpool tracked the guy who had been hired by the Dominus Corporation to clean the server to another job. This one was Rand Meacham Corporation in Long Island, New York. When he got there, he found his buddy Weasel installing the Dominus objective into the Rand Meacham system, although Weasel denies this.
So then the issue proper opens up with a splash page of Deadpool taking on both Heroes for Hire in defense of his friend. You know, he says, Weasel says he didn't do it. I'm going to back him up. And so he's dodging a kick from the Iron Fist, and he's shooting Luke Cage across the right shoulder. And what I find interesting about this entire issue is, as this fight continues, and really as the issue continues, Luke Cage's shirt becomes an oddly twisted hourglass. Like, the longer the fight goes on, the less shirt is there, until he's pretty much, he has no shirt by the end of the issue. I kind of consider this that Nicole may have gotten on Patrick's ass for last issue's gratuitous bad girl scenes.
I mean, hey, for any girl who was trying to read this, they finally got to see a big hulky black guy. So that's good. You would think that anyway. Weasel lives up to his name and runs away from it all, which does make a little bit of sense, as he is one of out of the four of them that no one would pick for a backup in a fight. He's a weasel. As the fight starts to go badly for Deadpool, the Cable Cavalry arrives and sends Cage, the man with super strength and bulletproof skin and shirtless, flying with a punch from his techno-organic arm.
So, that's kind of a powerhouse move from a guy who, according to this story by now, has no powers. Like, he basically is a human with a robot arm. That his power is, oh gosh, I can't remember. There's like a character who's essentially that, and it's, yeah. But that's who Cable is. So it's interesting that he is able to have such an effect in a face-to-face, just like, I punch you in the face and you fall back type deal on Luke Cage. It's the kind of thing that you kind of do expect from a character like Cable, though. He's kind of no one underestimates him, and they're always aware that he's a force to be reckoned with. So even without these powers, that's kind of what this is. As the fight rages on inside the building, the bad girls are outside. Black Mamba is taking care of the perimeter guards by letting them imagine they're living their greatest fantasy, while Asp is breaking into the security video feeds to see what they could be walking into. So she kind of rewinds it a little bit to look at what's going on before everyone gets there. Diamondback, on the other hand, is standing in the middle of all this and literally pretty much narrating what everyone else is doing, which I find interesting because they often point out her connection to Captain America and like imply he trained her. So this is, you know, what she learned in the Steve Rogers School of Stealth. Tell everyone what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah. Were you thinking of from Mortal Kombat? The black guy with metal arms?
No. There's someone.
Okay. I can't remember then.
It's on the tip of my mind, and I can't fucking find it. So, you know, I mean, it's just going to until I remember it tomorrow.
Okay. as Asp watches what had happened inside 8 minutes before her handheld screen, Diamondback and Mamba watch as Weasel runs past, followed by Deadpool, followed by Iron Fist, followed by Luke Cage. This literally sounds like an episode of Scooby-Doo.
Oh, it totally was.
Yeah, who is threateningly carrying a section of the metal wall that is a double his size. Luke Cage is ridiculously strong. Cable then strolls by and says to the observers, "We do put on quite a show, don't we?"
You're not wrong. Like that Scooby-Doo analogy is apt. Like as I think back to like the image page and how they drew it out, it is totally just like, you know, Shaggy, then Scooby, then, you know, Fred, then Velma, then Daphne, then the ghost. Yeah. You know, and
I love those scenes, to be honest. Those are always made me laugh.
And like, so when Cable, by the time Cable strolls by, it's like his turning and saying that to the bad girls is like their acknowledgement of the ridiculousness of the scene. And but the twist in a minute is just, you know, what the fuck. Weasel climbs the security fence, but Deadpool is waiting for him on the other side, as he is suspicious that Weasel would run away if he really did nothing wrong. You know, Danny Rand has been accusing Weasel from the beginning of company servers with a virus, and Deadpool's like, my buddy said he didn't, I'm trusting his word. So now Deadpool's like, I trusted your word, are you fucking kidding me on this? And the Heroes for Hire are close behind. They basically Deadpool asks Weasel, why the fuck you running if you did nothing wrong? And then there's Luke Cage and Danny Rand, like, because he did do it wrong. Ah, ha, ha. His, you know, that was their role the whole time. And the ensuing conversation goes nowhere until Cable arrives, apparently having, you know, because he's so friendly and congenial that apparently he tricked them into letting him kick their asses off panel. He's literally got his, like, one of them in his metal arm by the throat. You know, and the other two are like being pushed forward. Like, yeah, look at these girls. I just beat the fuck up off panel. You know, and he basically confiscated their access to Rand Meacham's security videos, which shows a familiarly unfamiliar shadowy figure. For those of you out there who listened to our last episode, where we were talking about how there's just this shadowy figure that is showing up. We know that there have been a bunch of people who have been hired to steal this objective. So it's kind of like there's going to be a reveal, and it's going to be it's someone we've seen, but it's like D-list shit. So that person, the video shows that person attacking Weasel after he had already attached the Dominus objective to the Rand Meacham computer system.
With this new evidence, Deadpool decides to turn Weasel over to Danny Rand and Luke Cage. But at that moment, Black Mamba uses her power to effect an escape for herself and her compatriots. However, this time, we readers do not get to see the fantasy, though we do get to see all five men coming into a mess of tangled limbs. No one wants to look anyone else in the eye, so Deadpool asks if anyone else smells tanning oil. I'm thinking of Cable again.
Well, he's referencing back to that, but the way they're all, like, avoiding each other's gaze, it's kind of like they were all imagining rubbing each other up with oil, is the implication. So, you know, for Deadpool, it makes sense. He's famously pansexual, you know. I mean, his wife was a monster, so.
Yep. You
know, he'll do whatever. But, you know, it was just... at least this time, whereas with the Deadpool one in the last issue, where he had to prove his virility for anyone who might doubt it for the entire rest of the issue, at least this time, they don't have that gratuitously throughout the end of the issue. Like, the guy's kind of like, let's go inside and not talk about this ever again.
Pretty much.
Inside, Weasel repairs the computer systems as he confesses to attaching the Dominus objective to them. Cable and Weasel then together also finally explain the objective in a way that actually at least makes a little bit of sense.
Basically, once the drive had been attached anywhere in a system, it becomes a root passcode to all of the data contained within that system.
So, if Weasel had successfully attached it to the Rand Meacham servers from wherever he was with the Dominus objective, he would have been able to access all of the data contained on those servers. So, like, when it comes to a company like Rand Meacham, that means all the R&D, anything he wanted to access. And so when he's sitting there going, I just wanted to see if it worked, that's kind of, you know, high-grade horseshit. He was like, if this works, I'm going to get paid. By stealing from Iron Fist.
Cable, on the other hand, is thinking bigger. Without revealing too much, he asks about if there is a person, maybe a mutant that we had already seen in the pages of Cable and Deadpool series, whose power is basically to be a conduit for any data that is broadcast wirelessly. If this possible person were to obtain access to the Dominus objective, it would provide a way for that mutant to process all the information that flows through him, which is a shit ton.
Yeah, and the thing is, if it's not really making sense, it's because this character, first off, still has to be revealed here, even though we have seen them before, and then even after the reveal here, they still have to be further revealed as another character from, like, Cable's past that has this power. So, you know, it's kind of a mystery within an enigma at this point. Iron Fist catches on to Cable's, like, cryptic messaging and thinks that Cable knows who the shadowy figure we have been seeing is, because they've all seen that on the tape. But Cable replies he doesn't need that knowledge. He doesn't need to know who the fuck stole the objective if he knows the person who hired the person who stole the objective. And then he surprises everyone because and invites Deadpool back to Providence with him, which is a marked change in his policy from previous issues. Because as far as we know, even after like the intermission where they were at Intercourse, Pennsylvania, having their little time together, they still don't trust each other. And so like Deadpool hasn't really been welcomed back to Providence since he was unceremoniously kicked out after killing Haji bin Barat.
Sorry, I'm still laughing at Intercourse.
That's
the
point.
Okay. This is funny. Weasel looks to Wade, hopefully for help, and Deadpool offers him a choice. He can go with the incoming security officers and face charges, or Deadpool can shoot him.
Yeah, it's a tough scene. He's like, Weasel's like, Wade, you aren't gonna help me? He's like, sure, Weez, I'll help you however you want. Their way or mine? And it's just, you know, the gun to his forehead. It's like, fine, I'll stay. I'm pretty sure this is the last time we'll see Weasel for a while. I think he does show up more towards the end of the series. Although it might not. I haven't read the series in a while, so I can't remember if it's him or a different character who I fucking love that will be showing up before the end. And he's iconic. He was referenced in the movie, and he's great. Great sidekick. Anyway, but this is pretty much the last time we'll see Weasel for at least a long while in this story. And it's kind of much like how TJ Miller is unlikely to reprise his role of Weasel when Deadpool 3 goes into production.
Such a shame. He really did play that well.
And then he was an asshole off screen.
Yeah. The security officers try to arrest Cable and Deadpool as well, but they simply body slide to Providence instead. Meanwhile, the bad girls have identified the shadowy figure from the last two issues. The thief who attacked Weasel and stole the Dominus Ejecta from him is...
Shenkui!
The cat.
So cool.
Anyways, the cat attaches the Ejecta to the modem of another familiar face from earlier in the series.
The Black Box. And that is the reveal that had been foreshadowed by Cable earlier in the issue. And for those of you who aren't listening to us out of nostalgia for a series they read a long time ago and who have no idea what that last joke was referencing, basically the first time that we see Shenkui in any of these issues, the first time we see the cat in this story, every time he shows up, Deadpool demands to see his tattoo, which is a big just like panther on his chest. And every time he shows it, Deadpool goes, oh, so cool. So I just threw that in there as a self-referential reference that nobody would get if they were not actually reading the actual fucking comic, because I don't think we've ever talked about it before. Just a shitty little reference that, you know, when you have to explain the joke, it's never funny. So, fuck that.
Yeah, way to make it a dad joke now.
For those who are unaware, the Black Box himself is a mutant with the power to access all broadcast wireless data. In this case, it's being shown more as this was the early years of wireless, regardless in general. So like, you know, we've now been living with it for a long time, for a relatively longer time than that. But, so this was brand new. And so his power is based on his power as it was known in like the late 80s, I don't think he was in the late 80s, but like early 90s type deal. He showed up in some Cable issues before, but I can't exactly remember where in the actual date range it was. And in those pages, he was a different name. So we've known him only as the Black Box so far, and his ability to access all broadcast wireless data is an extension of his original powers. He's basically like a telepath for radio, television, and the internet. He's essentially a Charles Xavier for computer networks. You know how they always describe Charles Xavier as the most powerful telepath, can access any mind in the world if he chooses, blah, blah, blah. That's what this guy is for computers. And attached to the Dominus objective, he is essentially given access to every server in the world with a built-in passcode to all of them. Because if he can link to every computer now with the Dominus objective, just like it would have provided a passcode for anything in a system, he has access to every system. So, you know, he's this is just a way for him to, it's like taking Charles Xavier and sharpening his actual power as the most powerful by 100, by like at least 100 to 1,000%.
Which is some perspectively scary shit that we will maybe explore in the next episode/issue. Until then, we can discuss our favorite art.
So mine was the opening splash page, or I did like Luke Cage's slowly disappearing shirt. I think it's just a trope with him, because I think that happened a couple of times in the TV show too. Where so like
yeah, it did. He was like pretty much had like 20% of a shirt left.
But I think that's like a Luke Cage trope, because like he's bulletproof. So if people are shooting bullets at him, like, well, yeah, he's bulletproof. His clothes aren't.
You know? No. So, I mean, definitely not the shirts. So,
yeah.
So I do like the splash page as well. I think it was just kind of cool to see them talking and just kind of look on Luke Cage's face being like, this is so annoying and stupid. Why?
But when you pointed out the sort of allusion to Scooby-Doo in that one scene where everyone was running past the bad girls, like the setup was stupid. I couldn't stand the whole, especially just Diamondback narrating shit. But the scene where they're running by and it's literally like it's madcap. It's like a scene lifted straight out of Scooby-Doo, and it was really done well. I fucking love that part.
The favorite part of the story.
What was yours? I think.
mine for the most part. Favorite part of the story. Honestly, as we were talking about the Scooby-Doo part, it just brought a little nostalgia there, just because I like a good old fight scene. But the fact that they throw like that little slice bit of comedy.
Yeah,
and also you have like someone trying to narrate it. It's kind of like, you know, you can be all serious like a soccer player would be, and then all of a sudden there's a dog. It's like, oh, he passes the ball, he goes like, oh, and there goes a greyhound taking the ball.
Yep.
Oh guys, we let the greyhound in. So you know, it just kind of made me laugh, and I think that was just a nice real, you know, quick bit of comedy into it.
Yeah.
Also just Weasel being a weasel was just kind of hysterical.
Yeah, he was good at his namesake in this one. I think for me, my favorite part was, as you could tell from my excitement at them, was really the final reveals of the cat in the black box. Like, and really, when I first read this, I didn't feel that way, because I didn't really, like, I wasn't that well versed. I didn't know who they were, and so like now knowing like there's reference in all this, like that's, I mean, you could tell I was excited by it. I fucking ruined the joke for the cat that they use all the time. And when it comes to these two guys, what's interesting is I think they're supposed to be the bad guys of this story. Like you're supposed to view them as like, oh, they got that thing that everybody was trying to get. But since almost half of the other characters, including one of the title heroes, are trying to do what they successfully did, it's difficult to see them as true villains. And really, the way this is going to work out, neither one really is. So like, this is an interesting story because it is really a kind of a buddy cop story with no actual like villain that we've been revealed to yet. We've gotten the impression that the black box is a little unscrupulous. We'll make deals with people for information. He's like a shady information broker, but there's a lot of character development for him that's coming up. So I guess some of my favorite part of the story is tainted by having already read the character development and liking who he becomes.
All right. And as that, would that also be your issue MVP for this?
No, actually my issue MVP is Luke Cage for being a good friend. Although he could have done a little less bitching about being there. He really comes off like Dante from Clerks. Like, Dante always wants, I'm not even supposed to be here today. And that's kind of how I feel like Luke Cage. He's just like, man, I'm a fucking Avenger. I don't need to be here. I'm doing this for you, Danny.
To me, I'm going to go with Weasel. He's my MVP because he just plays his name perfectly, and he's trying to like totally be innocent. He's like, no, no, no. And he's like, But we caught you. Is like, all right. So here's what happened. So, and it just also gives me that I think Martin Lawrence used to do it. What happened was, so I don't know. That to me, he's the issue MVP on this one, just because I mean we won't see him for a while, like you said. But to me, like he made himself stand out in this because he plays to his name.
Yeah.
Shittiest character.
I went first last time. Your turn to go first.
I'm gonna go with the bad girls because honestly, they didn't really do much shit except for one was doing commentating. So she was trying to take my job, the bitch.
You took mine.
Yeah. Oh well. I'm sorry. I didn't fully read. So, it's just as I'm going through it, I'm like, everyone else had more lines and like it was fun, but I'm like, what the hell? Those three were just like standing there, kind of useless, like. They were shitting this one,
dude. We were of one mind on this because mine was also the bad girls. I said the most important part of their team this issue was the device they used to hack the Rand Meacham security feed. Like literally, the only like you could have taken the rest of them out of it. It wouldn't have changed the story at all. All you needed was a video to prove that Weeza was full of shit. The bad girls do almost nothing except for provide the setup for a joke about a possible homoerotic fantasy, like, you know, and especially coming off of, you know, 15 years of progress, it's just kind of you read it and you're kind of like, eh, maybe that was funny back then, but it's
not so much now. Yeah,
just doesn't really move me now. I'm like, that part, like, I love the story, but that part of the story doesn't hold up.
Yeah.
So, like, they and that's their only part, is a bad setup and having the important MacGuffin.
Well, as to we go, we push on ahead to the favorite part of the show for the three listeners that we have. Please pass the word on. I know I keep saying it, but please do. To the amazing skits that we have. And so for today, so what is the plan for our semi-informative skit segment?
Well, I kind of went overboard with my 4th of July celebrations this year.
When don't you ever, senseless? So we are doing a court-ordered PSA on fireworks safety help to help you possibly slip past some liability for maiming someone due to your negligence.
No one got hurt because of me this year.
Well, that's a surprise. So everyone set with you celebrated the 4th with and went home at the end with nothing happening in the evening.
I didn't say that. I said no one got hurt because of me this year.
Then why does it matter now if you went overboard for Independence Day?
Because I have these.
Holy shit. If that's your leftovers, then how much did you spend on fireworks this year?
How much would you say is too much?
Did you travel out of state for access to the good stuff?
No.
That's my question. Oh. Then you spend too much. There's more than $100 worth of leftovers in that box.
Well, that's just, like, your opinion, man. Anyways. Want to help me safely dispose of these?
Are either of us really safe when you're around?
I think so. I mean, I go to sleep every night. I can't do shit when I'm unconscious, right?
And yet, even when you're unconscious, I still worry for my safety.
Okay, fine. Let's start safe and simple. I have some of those snake things.
The boring ones? That just expand into long tubes of ash?
Damn right.
Dumbass, you're on the driveway.
Yeah, so?
The driveway we just cleared of oil stains at the instance of the landlord, who was this close to initiating legal action against us due to the size of the mess on her property?
Yeah, so?
The first snake you lit is finishing. Take a look at the result.
Is that gooey shit stain looking residue?
Well, since you lit the whole pack at once, that appears to be the start of your next cleaning project. My advice? Don't get this choke this time.
Damn. All right.